It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our continuing coverage of the COVID-19 crisis. I'm your host, Bob Price. Great to have you with us today. The Trump administration plans to release soon a plan for getting America back to work, open for business, as they say. An eagerness to jumpstart the economy has opened up a healthy debate over states' rights versus the role of the federal government. Mr. Trump is confident that the buck stops with him on this one.
We have local government that hopefully will do a good job. And if they don't do a good job, I'd step in so fast. But no, they can't do anything without the approval of the President of the United States.
The President promises this will be the most significant decision he has ever made as since taking office. That question about when to get America back to work. He continues to scoff at suggestions that he acted too slowly at first in containing the crisis.
Challenged by CBS's Paula Reed to explain what his administration did in February to prepare for the spread of the virus.
A lot.
The president cited his decision in late January to curb travel from China.
We really have done this right. The problem is the press doesn't cover it.
Mr. Trump, who held 5 campaign rallies in the month of February, insists he has the power to tell states when they can and can't reopen.
The President of the United States calls the shots.
Stephen Portnoy, Washington.
The governors of 6 states, including New York and Pennsylvania, are working together to come up with regional ways to reopen their economies in the aftermath of this pandemic.
People are still dying. The economy is still tanking. And we know that the draconian steps we are now taking cannot go on forever.
Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf.
The real goal, of course, is to get to the point that we can fully resume our normal lives. This will require time, along with a recognition that the new normal will be very different from the old normal we had grown used to.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo expects to have recommendations within weeks from his Blue Ribbon Commission. He remains cautiously optimistic.
The worst is over. Yeah, if we continue to be smart going forward, because remember, we have the hand on that valve. You turn that valve too fast, you'll see that number jump right back.
The governor says it will take $500 billion for New York to recover from the catastrophic damage the coronavirus did on New York's economy. There's concern today about a so-called second surge of coronavirus in Asia, where this bug was born. Correspondent Raymond Innocencia.
An uptick in infection numbers is now being reported across Asia. And now a new worry, viral reactivation. More than 100 people who recovered in South Korea have tested positive again.
In terms of a second surge, are you nervous right now?
I am nervous.
Dr. Jerome Kim is an epidemiologist based in Seoul.
What I hope is that what we see instead are little blips. So it's like putting out a fire. You know that there are going to be embers that are glowing or smoking. You want to stamp those out before the fire starts again.
China today reported 100 new cases of coronavirus, the most in 6 weeks. But there are signs of a recovery in much of Europe, as we hear from Vicky Barker.
Denmark, among the first in Europe to lock down, now easing up. Primary schools and daycare centers reopened today. Italy, Austria, and the Czech Republic now allowing some small shops to reopen. Spain will follow next week. But France has extended its lockdowns till mid-May, and the same is expected here in the UK, where the government's being accused of underreporting the true coronavirus death toll by excluding old people dying in nursing homes.
In other news today, more than 30 deaths blamed on those horrific tornadoes that touched down in the deep south on Easter Sunday and again on Monday. From Texas to Maine, over 1 million people have no power.
We have one reported tornado in Mississippi that tracked over 100 miles. So this was one for the record books in terms of how many tornadoes we had. Close to 80 tornadoes right now. The National Weather Service has to go out and assess the damage. But you can see stretching from Texas through Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, through Georgia, up towards the Carolinas and Virginia. reports of tornadoes in a two-day span.
Forecaster Janice Dean. Big political news today. Former President Barack Obama has thrown his political weight behind Joe Biden, his VP, for two terms. Obama will make the endorsement official this afternoon. Bill McGurn with the Wall Street Journal thinks Democrats will pull out all the stops to try and defeat President Trump in November.
Democrats do want to defeat Donald Trump, and I think they're more agitated than last time. Last time they wanted to defeat him, but they were coasting a little because everyone thought Mrs. Clinton would win. This time, I think there's going to be no breaks. It's going to just be an all-out fight.
Yesterday, Joe Biden received the endorsement of former rival Bernie Sanders. Millions of us should be getting our coronavirus economic stimulus checks this week. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says 80 million people will get their direct deposit by Wednesday. Still to come on the Noon Report, Wegmans limits customers, a lifeline for dairy farmers, and what it means to be an essential worker.
Well, good afternoon to all. A chilly air mass in place now will likely linger through the week. I've got the numbers and your complete forecast coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, see you then. Thanks, Kevin. Power crews have been working round the clock to get the lights back on from last night's windstorms.
At one point last night, 26,000 people were without power in New York and more than 11,000 in Pennsylvania after wind gusts topped 70 miles an hour, ripping the roof off of City Hall in Wilkes-Barre and flipping three shopping cart corrals outside the Giant food store in Scranton, sending the carts through the windows of parked cars. In Erie County, New York, the commissioner held a press conference and said in his county, power crews were assembled before the storm even hit to make sure they could get the lights back on as fast as possible. Sarah Harnish, Family Life News.
Thank you, Sarah. New York changing what it means to be an essential worker.
Chiropractors, you may now report for work in New York. The same goes for landscapers, lawyers, and telecommunications workers. The definition of essential worker is constantly changing as the state weighs requests from various workplaces looking to remain open during the global pandemic. Public parks with open space are considered essential, but only if they're large enough to allow people to maintain a 6-foot social distance. Playgrounds that are too cramped must remain closed. Movie theaters and gyms have been closed since mid-March and will stay that way for the time being. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. 18 patients at the Geisinger Hospital System died today as a result of COVID-19. Geisinger has 13 campuses across the Commonwealth. The Republican-led Pennsylvania House hopes to vote today on a plan to reopen businesses shuttered for weeks due to coronavirus. Congressman Fred Keller.
We want to see a responsible, collaborative effort to get Pennsylvania's economy going. And again, I think the governor needs to look at the other people that have been elected to help run this state. It's not a one-person show.
The legislation pending in the State House would permit car sales, expand construction projects, and further ease restrictions on the retail industry. Downstate, coronavirus numbers not likely to impact when upstate schools and businesses reopen. That's according to New York's second-in-command, Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul.
The apex that's been hit and now has plateaued at an extremely high level across the state, but more focus in New York City. We don't know if that's going to continue upstate or whether or not upstate is out of the woods yet. It's too early to declare. It's mid-April. It's too early to talk about whether schools will be open before the end of the year.
Schools and non-essential businesses remain closed in New York through April 29th. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand sponsoring a loan forgiveness program for New York dairy farmers hit hard by the virus.
It's a $9 billion bill that allows any small farmer in the country who has debt to be able to have debt forgiveness.
Many farmers have been dumping their milk because so many dairy processors are shut down. Dustin Bliss runs a dairy farm in Cattaraugus County.
Dairy products are still safe to consume. Milk is not being dumped because it's being infected with a virus such as COVID-19. Milk is being dumped because of a shortage of processing capacity in this country.
Senator Gillibrand's bill provides a one-time debt forgiveness of up to $250,000. What's old is new again as upstate business owners look to the past for ways to handle the restrictions from COVID-19. Family Life's Jeremy Miller explains.
Yeah, Trinity Valley Dairy in Cortland County is bringing back an old tradition to help its customers stay safe. The business has been delivering milk and other dairy products bread from the bakery, eggs, meat, syrup, and other locally made foods to homes across the region. It's the comeback of the milkman. The home delivery service has helped make up for some of the lost business, and it's a perfect fit for the dairy's old-school approach. If the delivery service continues to be successful, it could be expanded to other areas. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you, Jeremy. Wegmans has a plan in place to limit the number of customers allowed in stores. A number of other retailers doing the same thing to try and stop the spread of coronavirus. Wegmans stores will be operating at 15 to 20% of their maximum occupancy. The company has also closed its market cafes and installed sanitizer stations as well as plexiglass at all cash registers and pharmacies to protect employees. Former New York Governor George Pataki is giving high marks to the current governor for his handling of the COVID-19 crisis.
I think the governor has done a very good job in the communications. The briefings have been enlightening and helpful to people who want to be informed and know what's going on.
Pataki says now is not the time to play the blame game.
Let's focus on dealing with the crisis, getting this behind us, and rebuilding our economy. And come November during the elections, we can figure out who should have done what when.
Pataki was at the helm in New York during its last great crisis, which was 9/11. The Pennsylvania State Police closing its training academy in Hershey. That will be shut down for 2 weeks after somebody tested positive for the virus. Family Life's Terry Diener.
During the closure, the 100 cadets comprising the 159th class will continue instruction remotely from home. Instructors with the state police continue to adjust instruction so that the 159th state police class can meet the standards set by the department and graduate by July 24th. That's scheduled. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
And another summer festival canceled in western New York. That story new at noon from Family Life's Dee Haley.
Burgerfest has been called off due to COVID-19 concerns. Organizers of the annual Burgerfest in the village of Hamburg announced the cancellation yesterday. The event was scheduled to be held in July. Organizers say Burgerfest takes months to plan, and it's difficult to imagine going from our current self-quarantine atmosphere to being with crowds of people this summer. Organizers say next year's festival is scheduled for July 17th, 2021. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
Okay, Dee, thank you very much. The two-minute drill next at noon with Sonny Delfiat.
Thank you, Bob. Some football news. Christian McCaffrey has agreed to a four-year, $64 million contract extension with the Panthers. That makes that all-pro the highest-paid running back in the NFL. Last season, McCaffrey became just the third player in NFL history to rush for 1,000 yards and have 1,000 yards receiving in the same season, as he ran for 1,387 yards and hauled in 1,005 yards through the air. The 23-year-old already has totaled 39 touchdowns. It also the only player in history to amass 2,500 yards rushing and receiving through his first three seasons. That boy good. The NFL and Players Union have agreed that virtual offseason workout programs will be allowed until all 32 teams are permitted to open their facilities. The three-week virtual offseason starts next Monday for teams with new head coaches and April 27th for all the others. ESPN and the NFL Network have partnered to provide a single combined NFL draft telecast to be aired on both networks for the entirety of the event from April 23rd through the 25th. NASCAR star Kyle Larson has been suspended indefinitely after using the N-word in a live stream during an iRacing event Sunday, and his two primary sponsors, McDonald's and Credit One Bank, have cut ties with him. Larson.
Yeah, there's no excuse for that. You know, I wasn't raised that way. You know, it's just an awful thing to say, and I feel very sorry for my family, my friends, my partners, the NASCAR community, and especially the African-American community.
NASCAR ordered Larson to complete a sensitivity training course before he's eligible for reinstatement. And the Tour de France has been postponed due to the pandemic. The three-week race scheduled to begin June 27th, but French President Emmanuel Macron announced that all public events with large crowds have to be canceled until at least mid-July. This, too, shall pass. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Thank you very much, Sonny. Still to come, Barack Obama makes an endorsement 18 months before recovery and the good work going on at Convoy of Hope.
In the midst of this coronavirus crisis, Christians can care both for those who are suffering
and for religious liberty. In fact, we must care about both. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. The media narratives that have emerged from the COVID-19 pandemic are varied. Some, like the lack of supplies for medical personnel and first responders, are very important. Others, like the stories about churches and their defiant pastors who refuse to comply with physical distancing and stay-at-home orders, well, they're mostly selective and overblown. Of course, there are churches and pastors behaving badly. A few. A very few. Less than 1%, in fact. To suggest that they're somehow representative of all Christians is both misleading and slanderous. Also, largely ignored in so many of these stories about these churches is the fact that in many towns, counties, and states, the stay-at-home orders are, well, confusing. Some might even be illegal. Understandably, many Christians struggle to know how to take the alarming headlines about pastors being arrested, and many churches and Christian ministries struggle to know how to carry out their mission at this time. Kristen Wagoner, vice president of the Alliance Defending Freedom, told me that ADF is now receiving about 100 calls a day from churches and other ministries about COVID-19 related issues that are asking for help in understanding and complying with federal, state, county, and municipal orders. That regulations are being issued at these four levels of government is just one of the potential problems. And the orders not confusing or inconsistent are at times being applied and enforced inconsistently or in ways discriminatory against the free exercise of religion. The most important thing to remember, as Kristen Wagoner stated emphatically during the podcast, is that First Amendment rights cannot be suspended permanently. That's why the threat from New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio to permanently close some churches after the crisis is manifestly absurd. Two main requirements must be met for any infringement on religious freedom, including during a time of national or local emergency. First, any infringement must advance a compelling state interest. And second, it must be done in the least restrictive way possible. The orders, however, must be clear. A person should be able to understand what is and what is not restricted without having to hire a lawyer. According to Wagoner, many of the COVID-19 restrictions are failing this clarity test, especially at the local level. Unclear restrictions make inconsistent enforcement by government nearly inevitable. This is especially true when local officials have an agenda and see an opportunity to take advantage of a crisis and crack down on groups they don't like, including religious ones. For instance, in both Charlotte and Greensboro, North Carolina, in recent days, believers have been arrested for praying outside abortion clinics, even though they were obeying local distancing orders. Now, I was encouraged when Kristen Wagoner told me that most of the time, a simple letter written to state and local officials pointing out problems or seeking clarification in their orders is all it takes. The professionality of the Alliance Defending Freedom is one of their best tools, but they're pretty good in court, too. Even in the best of times, guarding our First Amendment freedoms can be an uphill battle. And these are not the best of times. That's why I'm grateful that Kristen Wagoner and the Alliance Defending Freedom are there to help guide us through these confusing times. My interview with Kristen Wagoner airs today on the Breakpoint Podcast. Subscribe to the Breakpoint Podcast wherever you get your podcast, or come to breakpoint.org to listen. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Let's take it outside next. Check the forecast with Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life weather forecast. The call for this afternoon, brisk winds and chilly. We'll find a good deal of cloudiness with a stray sprinkle or flurry. High temperatures mainly in the 40s. For tonight, patchy clouds, a chance for a sprinkle or a flurry. Low temps, mid-20s to the mid-30s. Tomorrow on Thursday, clouds will prevail over the sun with a shower here, a flurry there, and high temperatures mainly in the 40s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report, a Tuesday edition. I'm your host, Bob Price. If you're just joining us, here's a recap of the day's top stories. Breaking right now from the world of politics, former President Barack Obama endorsing his VP today, Joe Biden. That will become official in a video message later this afternoon. Now, yesterday, Biden also picked up the endorsement of former rival Bernie Sanders. Over 30 people lost lost their lives from those killer tornadoes that ripped up much of the South on Easter Sunday.
I think that we're probably going to see some major catastrophic damage with some of these tornado reports, EF4, EF5, which means winds of 166 to 200 mile per hour plus winds. Just an incredible outbreak that we saw on Easter Sunday and yesterday.
Janice Dean, Fox News, says as many as 80 twisters touched down earlier this week. President Trump claims absolute authority for how and when to reopen the economy from the coronavirus crisis.
When it comes to lifting stay-at-home orders and issuing new guidance, the president says he's the decider, not governors.
When somebody's the president of the United States, the authority is total, and that's the way it's got to be.
Governors from both parties are pushing back and say they have the constitutional responsibility in their states. But Mr. Trump disagrees.
The president of the United States calls the shots.
At the same time, the president says he will work with the states, even though he has the absolute right to announce when the antivirus guidelines are over. Greg Clugston, Washington.
The governors of New York and Pennsylvania and four other states have formed a coalition on how and when to open their economies. New York's chief executive says there is no timeline for when the restrictions will be lifted.
Governor Cuomo says we have shown we can stop the spread of coronavirus.
It's not a decline. It's just a flattening of the increase.
Cuomo announcing yesterday he's forming a coalition with a number of northeastern states to come up with a plan to get things going again. We told NBC's Today Show the key is testing.
And the states can't do it on their own. We have to develop that widespread testing capacity.
The governor says he does not have a timeline.
If anybody tells you they do, they don't understand the issue ahead of us.
Scott Pringle, New York.
The man who ran the financial recovery of this country from the 2008 economic collapse, making a bold prediction about coronavirus.
I don't think we're going to go back to the way life was like in January or February for the next year or next 18 months. I think we're going to have to be much more targeted as we try to reopen the economy.
That's Neel Kashkari, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. He helped run the bailout of the Treasury Department during the last fiscal crisis.
Until you really extinguish it with either a treatment or a vaccine, there's always that risk of flare-up. And so we have to be very careful and think over the long term. To me, it's not about the next couple weeks or the next month even. It's about how do we get to that destination of a vaccine or a therapy.
Again, Neel Kashkari predicting a gradual return to normalcy, and we mean gradual. He says it won't be complete for another year. It's a year and a half. It's tax season, and the IRS, the scammers, are apparently trying to cash in on the confusion surrounding this pandemic.
NBC News consumer correspondent Vicky Nguyen says the FTC says it's received more than 15,000 complaints related to the virus.
There's a lot of concern from the IRS that people don't know and that they're searching out information and that scammers are going to try to prey on that.
She adds, if you've just checked your bank account and the money just isn't there, don't panic.
If that is the case for you, you didn't get a refund, but you are still eligible, go to the irs.gov/coronavirus website. That is the only time you should be filling out any personal information.
Remember, the IRS never calls or sends you an email. They will send you snail mail.
That's Michael Kastner reporting. A 97-year-old World War II veteran from the state of Washington got an uplifting birthday surprise yesterday. Since social distancing kept people from being able to celebrate Robert Coleman, birthday with him, well, his family put together a drive-by party.
It's not often that a guy gets to be 97. Yeah. Had no idea. I looked out and here's a whole string of cars.
How about that? Coleman says his faith in God has been helping him through these trying times. Well, next at noon, Family Life's Tracy Lynn highlights the efforts of one not-for-profit, which is on the front lines of getting meals to America's most vulnerable population amid this ongoing coronavirus pandemic.
Amid the COVID crisis, we've seen a lot of pain, but we're also seeing a lot of good. Today, we're speaking with Jeff Nini of Convoy of Hope. You guys are doing a really good work, Convoy of Hope. Your goal is to get 10 million meals out to people.
That's right. Early in March, we set a goal of 10 million meals that we wanted to provide to people that have been affected by the coronavirus, whether that's by the disease itself or by the economic fallout from the disease, unemployment, things like that. But we wanted to really make a big statement and do our part in helping our country get back on its feet again. And so when we first decided we were going to do 10 million meals, the OE of little faith in me said, holy cow, that's a big step. I don't know if we can do that or not. But fortunately, we serve a big God, and he does big things.
Amen. And you already have the infrastructure in place. You're used to doing this.
That's true. We have 18 to 20 tractors and trailers that we are normally used to delivering food and supplies around the country and really around the world. We feed 300,000 children every school day in about 16 different countries around the world right now. So the logistics side of it, we've got handled. It's coming up with all that food and being able to resource it so that we can distribute it. That's the big challenge.
Yeah, I know that food banks are crying out for help right now. And is that how you're teaming up, or how does this work?
It's kind of a combination. The distribution side of it is really unique. I don't know of anyone else that does it like we do, but we partner primarily with local churches, where we will go into a community, and we've learned this through the 25, 26 years that we've been operating now. Nobody knows a community better than the local church. So for us to come in and look at a community and think we know what to do, we don't. We don't know that community, but that local church does. Then they are distributing. Sometimes it's through food banks. Sometimes it's through a drive-through in their churches. I just saw a news report of a church in Dayton that took a lot of our product, and they've distributed it to 10 different churches in that community, all geographically different areas, so that they can really meet the needs of Dayton, Ohio. So it's being done differently, but it's being done in the way that's best for that community.
Well, I love the church being the church. Now, when it comes to numbers, as far as the food requests, how do those numbers compare this year compared to last year and maybe even to last month?
Well, this year, the food requests are way up. As soon as we announced this 10 million meal initiative, we started getting requests, and now we've had over 500 requests from over 40 states. So that shows you the need that's out there. I just saw the unemployment numbers. The last one I saw was like 16 million people that have filed for unemployment now. So there is a big need out there, and we're just seeing that continue to increase.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. Now, when I hear meal, I get hungry. What kind of meals are we talking about, Jeff?
A lot of it depends on what kind of food we can get. You know, sometimes it might be a pasta meal, spaghetti and spaghetti sauce. Other times there'll be different types of vegetables included. It just really varies. There's a supply of snacks always that goes in with those. And it's hard to say because it's so dependent on the organizations that will donate food to us. And then now, because the need is so great, we're actually having to buy a lot of that food as well, which makes it more difficult. But fortunately, we have people that have gotten behind what we're doing, and they say, hey, we want to help. We figure we're able to do it for about $1 a meal. But that's still, if you figure 10 million meals, that's $10 million. That's a lot to come up with.
Wow, it's a huge undertaking. I appreciate that you all are doing that and that you're working with the churches. Jeff, why do you take part in Convoy of Hope? Why is this important to you?
That's a great question. As we look around our environment, our world as we see it, we can choose to just look at nice things, or we can choose to just look at bad things, or we can choose to look at that broad spectrum. And I try to look at it from a broad spectrum approach. You can't help but see the need that is out there. And I truly believe that that's part of our calling from God. Part of why he put us on this earth, the mission that he's given us, is to help people in need. Our founder, Hal Donaldson, says it this way: just do the next kind thing in front of you. And I think if every single person, every one of your listeners today, would just do the next kind thing in front of them, how much better would our world be? How much better would our community, our little slice of the world pie, how much better would it be if we would just do the next kind thing in front of us?
Wow, that sums it up so well.
I just read a story the other day about a nurse and the amount of hours that she was working to help people. it goes back to that do the next kind thing. People can be a part by going to their website, convoyofhope.org.
Somebody better put that on a bumper sticker. Do the next kind thing. Love it. Jeff Nini with Convoy of Hope, speaking to our own Tracy Lynn, doing its part in helping those most affected by this ongoing health emergency. By the way, you can download Tracy's interview by going to fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Behind the cold front that delivered the wind yesterday and last night has come chilly air, and that chilly air will be in place through the rest of the week. It will also be an unstable air mass that will allow for the sun to build cloud cover and pop a couple of scattered showers and flurries. No big storms, per se, but certainly very in keeping with how April can go. Sometimes warm and sunny, sometimes cold and a little messy. The call for this afternoon, brisk winds and chilly. We'll find a good deal of cloudiness with a stray sprinkle or flurry. High temperatures mainly in the 40s. For tonight, patchy clouds, a chance for a sprinkle or a flurry. Low temps, mid-20s to the mid-30s. Tomorrow on Thursday, clouds will prevail over the sun, with a shower here, a flurry there, and high temperatures mainly in the 40s.
All right, keep the winter jacket handy. Thank you, Kevin. And finally from us at noon today, social distancing at its finest. A Pennsylvania man is using his 55-foot-long train to deliver people's takeout meals. Take a listen.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Picture DoorDash with a full-service locomotive. There are train tracks that run right through Middletown, Pennsylvania, near the state capitol, and evidently an employee of the railroad got permission from the city to use his own personal train on the Middletown-Hummelstown Railroad tracks to deliver food. And that's our world for Tuesday, April 14th. As always, thanks for checking in. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.